So let's begin. If any of the various people who edit my writings were to get their hands on Parshat Chayisara, the Parsha would end up a lot smaller, a lot shorter. Do you appreciate that or not necessarily? You don't understand what I'm saying?
No, I don't understand what you mean.
There's too many words in the Parsha. There's much too many words. Let's call it three sections to the Parsha. The first one is the negotiations between Avraham and the children of Chet. Let's call that whole section the death and burial of Sarah. Theoretically, it could have been somewhat shorter. How much time does it actually take? It's not that bad. So you're only saying it's not that bad compared to what comes afterwards, but the truth is it is pretty bad. Sorry. Yeah? Excuse me?
It's sung.
Well, I'll explain what I'm saying in a second. It's Perek Kaf Gimel, and it goes on roughly 20 verses to describe Sarah's death, the mourning, the negotiations, and finally the burial. When I compare this with, let's say, a couple of the other matriarchs, Rachel's death is mentioned, it's part of the story, part of the birth of Binyamin, and later on it gets returned to in Parshat Vayechi. Rivka and Leah never die. They are buried, by the way, but they never die. At the point of their deaths, it's not even mentioned. It just sort of goes by it. Later on, when Yaakov is trying to arrange for his own burial to be returned to Israel buried, then he mentions to bury me in this particular plot, because that is where Rivka is buried and that is where Leah is buried, even though he's somewhat apologetic for not having buried Rachel there. So I'm saying their deaths are not even mentioned, which you can draw whatever conclusions you want, and their burial is mentioned in passing. Over here, it could easily have said, and Sarah died at this and this age, Avram mourned her, which again is already a lot. And then it could have added in, and she was buried in this and this place. And it goes into a lot more discussion. Okay, that's the first section of the Parsha. The second section of the Parsha is Perek Kaf Dalet, and here's where people really point this out much more. So that's what Marion was intimating, that this one is really much worse. Here it carries on for some 67 verses, dealing with the courtship and the marriage of Rivka to Yitzchak. Again, the best part of the courtship is that Yitzchak doesn't even get involved in it. He does it by proxy. That's another way of solving the Shidduch crisis today. Just open up a company, and we can call it the Eved Avram Shidduch Services, where you have a proxy going on the dates for you, and the proxy finding the woman, and the proxy bringing her home to the person. And if you don't think this will catch on, then I'll just forget about it. But it goes on for 67 verses. And over here it's really extreme, because not only does it go into the whole process, it actually repeats the whole thing. Meaning a certain thing happens, and then they go inside the house, they say again, oh, this is what happened, come back, and then again. So there really are far too many words. And this, as I said, is the second part of the parasha, the whole, we'll call this, we have death, and then we have courtship. I'm not saying that there's an analogy between the two. There may be. And then the third part of the parasha is, I'll just call it everything else, but the everything else includes the loose ends in Avraham's life. That's what we'll call the last part, is all the loose ends get dealt with. And by the way, there too, there's too many words and too much description, and we're being told too much. So either, and again, if you want to get a sense of what's being told at the end, we have Avraham marrying again, Avraham having more children, Avraham bequeathing what is his to Yitzchak, and then at the end we have a discussion of the genealogy of Yishmael, and with that it ends. So we either have three independent problems, or we have one problem. And as you can already suspect, what I'm going to say is that we have one problem and not three independent problems. And there's something which is linking all three. Now, instead of being very difficult like I usually am, I'm somewhat apologetic for coming late. So instead of being deliberately difficult and not telling you to the very end what's going on, I'll tell you right now what's going on, and then we'll try to look through certain details to see evidence of it. The Avot and the Imahot, the patriarchs and the matriarchs, all lived dual lives. When I say they lived dual lives, what I mean by that is that on the one hand, they are individuals, they're people with their own private world, their own private lives, as to a certain extent, every single one of us, we're private people, our own existence, our own sphere that we operate in. And on the other hand, they operate on a national level, which means these are not just people who are these own private people who lived a long time ago. These are people who have a role in the birth and later on the existence of the Jewish people. So when we see sections like this, for example, we see the courtship of Rivka. So is this just a quaint story that was really nice for the grandchildren to be told? And how did you and grandma and grandpa meet? And okay, that's a nice story, right? Kids like that story, right? Or is there something else going on over here, namely issues having to do with the national existence, which therefore take upon a complete different complexion and therefore on a much more profound level need to be discussed? So I'll tell you very clearly, the first part of the parsha and the third part of the parsha are very easy to see in terms of the national message, which means if I flip this around a little bit and say, well, you know what? The burial of Sarah is not simply about that very sad day 4,000 years ago when Sarah died and there was a problem and needed a place to bury her. In retrospect, we look back at it, and this is the first acquisition in the land of Israel, which means that this is that first place. God had promised it, and God said, one day this will be yours, and one day there'll be a great nation, and so on, which means when I look at this in the national level, and I go back and say, okay, so God promised to Avram a long time ago that we are going to have a land. When did this really begin? Now that becomes a little bit more complicated. I can say that this begins when the Jews entered with Yehoshua. I can say that this begins, again, I could pick all kinds of times when it begins, but when I'm reading the story on a national level, then, right, I'm sure tour guides say this, right? Yes or no?
I use it.
Yeah, there you go. So it must be true. So we look back and say, okay, where did it begin that we started to have this land? So then Avram's acquiring of the Maariv HaMachpelah, acquiring of a place in Hebron, becomes much more than just details about a funeral that took place a long time ago. This happens to be our first acquisition. So again, I'm just stressing my point. That if I look at it on a personal level, then I have far too many words. If I look on a national level, so then the negotiations become much more important. The fact that money was offered for it, the fact that they said, no, take it for free, and Avram insists, no, I want to pay for it. Which again, I look at it on a personal level. I think many of us, certain things that we could get for free, well, why not, if I can get it for free, why not take it for free? Yes, we are all Jews, no? If you can get something for free, you'll take it for free. But when it becomes the first step towards acquiring something, that deed is very important to you. And thousands of years later, people are going to come back and say, well, how do you know that this is yours? Who says that's yours? It's not really yours. Say, no, we bought this. And then all the words in the negotiations that they were all recorded become much more important. Is that now perfectly clear why that would be a consideration? If I look at the third part of the parsha, the third part, again, I could say that this is just the finishing touches of the Avram story. And Avram had this other wife, and Avram had this other children. Now, what then could emerge from such information? It could emerge that when later, again, on an individual level, so okay, it's interesting footnotes for the biographer. Oh, this person happened to have, after his main love of his life, he happened to have married somebody else, and there were other children, and so on and so forth. So again, on a biographical level, it could be important, it could be less important. But what about on a national level? On a national level, especially, I want to establish who is going to be the true heir of Abraham, and who is going to follow the legacy of Abraham, then it takes upon a completely different complexion. And by the way, appreciate that the heir of Abraham has actually been a major subtext from the second that Avram came onto the scene. From the second that we met Avram, who is going to be his heir is actually an acute problem. And as again, I'm going to say the same thing again. As much as Avram and Sarah's infertility is a major tragedy on a private level, on a personal level, it's all the more a problem on a national level. So who's going to be following Avram's footsteps? Who's going to be taking over or going to be the replacement for Avraham? Which means Avram has a whole entourage. Avram has followers. Avram has made an impact in the world. So this impact that Avram's made, who's going to continue? And we have a number of candidates or perhaps pretenders along the way. The candidates that we meet are Lot, and then we see Lot is being sent away. We have Eliezer, Evet Avraham. And he says it at some point. Avram says, well, the only one that I have is Eliezer. So we realize that Lot is a potential follower. We realize that Eliezer is a potential... I don't know where the... Finally, a son is born. Finally, a son is born. And that's Ishmael. So now there is a possibility of this other person now who's going to be inheriting and taking over for Avraham. Maybe next year we'll pay attention a little bit more. I see this, I already say next year, I already say I'm going to teach next year, I already say I'm going to teach Parsha next year. I shouldn't say such things. Maybe on my Shir on Shabbos I'll talk about to analyze. I know. To analyze the relationship between Yishmael to Avraham and to Sarah. Yishmael has a dual relationship. Yishmael is almost always called a son of Avraham, a ben Avraham. But he's almost always referred to as the son of Hagar, Sarah's servant. But by the way, those things you could say is a contradiction. So who is he? Is he the son of a servant or is he the son of Avraham? And what's the answer? He's both. As the son of Avraham, there are certain blessings that are going to come to him. As the son of a servant, certain things are not going to come to him. Which means Yishmael has a dual identity. Do you all understand what I'm saying? On a personal level, he's Avraham's son. Certain things emerge from that. On a national level, I'm ignoring you. On a national level, he is the son of a servant and therefore has no rights and no privileges. So therefore, your question is answered. Is he really considered to be a firstborn? He is either Avram's son or he's nothing. So now it actually will depend if you look at the father or look at the mother. Now you can all tell me, so what's more important, the father or the mother? And don't answer right now, because that's actually very interesting, but not relevant. So therefore, when I look at the last part of the parsha, and it says, Perakav Hey, maybe you have this, maybe you don't. And it says, Vayosef Avram v'ikach isha u'shma keturah. He took another wife, her name is Keturah. Of course, there are comments, you don't have this in front of you in the sources. I said, maybe you have a chumash. And maybe it is Hagar, maybe it's not Hagar. V'tegidlo et Zimran, v'et Yakshan, v'et Medan, v'et Midian, v'et Yishbak, v'et Shuach, v'et Shan Yilad, et Shiva, v'et Adan. It gives a whole list of all these names and all these people. And then we're told the more important verse. And this is in Perek Kafhe, chapter 25, Pasuk Hey. V'yitain Avram et kol asher lo liyitzchak. Ulvnei hapilagshim asher laAvraham. Natan Avraham Matanot. Vayishalchem me'al Yitzchak beno ba'odenu chai kedma el eretz kedem. that after mentioning that he has all these other children, what does it say about them? Then it made again a value judgment. They're all children of Pelagshim. They're sons of Avraham. With all children of Pelagshim, a Pelagish would be, how would you translate? Concubines, which means less of a status. And all of them were told, he gave everything that he owned to Yitzhak. So again, I'm going to ask you, is this a statement which is telling us, in terms of Avram's own personal will, how he took care of his affairs? Or is this a statement on a national level telling us who Avram's true progeny is and where the line of Avram continues? So again, that's what I want to stress. This whole parasha is dancing around the same issue. And this issue is going to be one of continuity of the Jewish people and not just private issues which transpire within the life of Avraham. Correct. Meaning this is something which shouldn't surprise us. I'm just pointing out that that's really what the topic over here, which unites almost the entire parasha. There are some more really clear indications over here that tell us the same thing. When Avram passes away, which is immediately afterwards, Vayikberu oto Yitzchak v'Yishmael banav. So it's very interesting. Yishmael is called, he's called a ben, he's called a son. On the other hand, precedence was given to Yitzchak. I could have said that it should have said, right? Yishmael and Yitzchak, because that's the elder, and that's the younger, that's the first son, that's the second son, but no. Not only that, now listen to this wonderful verse. First, I'm going to continue reading here a little bit, just so you really get the sense of this. This is Kaf Hei Tet. V'yikvirota Yitzchak v'Yishmael banav. El ma'arat ha-machpela, el stei Efron ben Socher, chiti asher p'nei mamre. Hasadeh asher kana Avraham me'et b'nechet shama kubar Avraham v'sara ishto. The land which was bought, the plot that was bought by Avram from the sons of Chet, there Avram and Sarah, his wife, and you notice his wife, Ishto. We were just told in the last couple of our Avram had other wives. No, this is Ishto, which means the burial plot, now we go back to the beginning, the burial plot is where Avram and Sarah are going to be. Yes, Avram had other relationships. It doesn't make a difference. Avram was with the children. It doesn't make a difference. Let me just continue a little bit more. Listen to this verse, it's Pasuk Yud Bet. And this verse would have been difficult till I gave you our introduction. I don't know how much time I spent on our introduction. Let me just read the verse, and you will all now, you'll all understand this verse immediately. You ready? Pasuk Yud Bet. Ve'elu toldot Yishmael ben Avraham, asha yelda hagar ha-mitzrit shivchat sara la-Avraham. Should I translate? These are the generations of Yishmael, the son of Avraham, who was born to Hagar, the Egyptian, the servant of Sarah, to Avraham. Which means there's it's not a contradiction, there's a complexity. The complexity is Yishmael really is. And again, if you don't understand what I'm saying now, you're going to keep going back and forth from the beginning when Yishmael shows up and you say, hold it, who is he? No, the answer is it's Avraham's son. And Hagar may have even been considered by Avram to be a wife. One second, do you hear what I'm saying? Avram's orientation to Hagar may very well have been his wife. There are verses I can bring to back it up, but ultimately it doesn't make a difference because what relationship does she retain ultimately? She's the servant of Sarah. And the fact that she's the servant of Sarah doesn't make a difference that she's a wife to Avram. She's still a servant to Sarah. Which means I have contradictory descriptions over here. But the contradictory descriptions are themselves extremely important. Did everyone understand what I've said so far? Yeah.
This is not the only place where Sarah is mentioned as Avraham's wife. I think throughout the whole story of Avraham and Sarah is always referred to as Sarah Ishut Avraham.
Right.
Sarah Ishut. It is very emphasized that Sarah is Ishut Avraham.
When Avraham marries Hagar, how is she described? That was a question. Back in Lech Lecha.
Yeah,
V'sarai eshet Avram, that's what you're referring to. I'm back in Perek Ted Zayin. Lo yodala v'la shivcha mitzrit u'shma hagar. Right? She has a servant. V'toma sarai Avram, hinena atzrani Hashem yiledet, bana el shivchati. Right? So who is she? Who's Hagar? The shivcha. Ulai ben Abimenu v'shma Avram l'kol sarai. V'yitikach sarai eshet Avram et Hagar mitzrit shivchata. Again, Shivchata, Miketz Esa Shanim, Leshevet Avram Be'eretz Kanan, Vatitain Ota La'Avram Isha, her husband, Lo Le'isha, as a wife. So what's Hagar's relationship? Is she Avram's wife or is she Sarah's servant? What's the answer? Both. Both. Who's Yishmael, Avram's son or the son of a servant? What's the answer? Both. Do you realize the inherent contradiction of what we've just now said? Yes or no? Do you see the absolute contradiction of what we said?
Is it?
But first, you see the contradiction, and then we'll say it's a complex. Do you all see the contradiction? Who is Hagar? Is Hagar Avram's wife? It just said he's Avram's wife, but at the same time, but she remains, which means she can marry Avraham, she can have the wedding ring, she can have the ksuva on the wall. All this doesn't make a difference because who does she remain ultimately? Who's we? Actually, some of us actually do understand because there are ancient Ugaritic marriage contracts which tell us that in cases of infertility, the husband has the prerogative of taking a second wife, but it actually depends upon the status of the first wife, what the status of the second wife will be. Which it depends on the status of the first wife, which means if the first wife came from a poor family and less money was exchanged initially, then the husband could take a second wife. If the first wife came from a much more prestigious family, and again, read, more money changed hands, then he can't take a second wife. He can only take a concubine. Or in the cases in the middle, it's only with the approval of the wife. So over here, I just want to read one more thing, which now you will also appreciate. When Hagar is chased away, and the fact that Sarah can chase her away, what does Avram even say to her? She's your servant. Do as you want. So hold it. What is it? Is it his wife or is it her servant? What happens immediately afterwards? Vayimtza'a malach Hashem. The angel comes. Vayomer. And how does the angel address her? Hagar. Shivchat Sarai. Hagar. Servant of Sarai. So who is she? She's a servant of Sarai. But we were just told before, but she married Avraham. Who is Yishmael? He's a son of Avraham. But who else is he? He's the son of Hagar. And who's Hagar? Hagar remains the servant of Sarah, no matter, which means there is this issue of the status of Sarah, which what I've been trying to get to is actually the most important part of the whole parasha. Yes. Right. I'll try to get back to Avraham soon. I'm sorry, to Yaakov. I'll try to get to Yaakov, but we'll leave Yaakov on the side meanwhile, because we'll have lots of weeks to deal with Yaakov. There is a difference, but there is at least one point which is similar, and that's something which you need to see. So now, what do we all appreciate? We all appreciate that there is, now you'll correct me again, so I'll say there's a complexity in Avraham's life. On a personal level, he may have had more than one wife. On a national level, there's only one wife what we're concerned with. On a personal level, he has more than one son. On a national level, there is only one son. You'll go back and trace every single discussion and every single dialogue, including when God says, you'll take your son, your only son. Hold it, he has another son. So what is God saying? No, you don't have another son. At least in terms of the national level, there is no other son. Which means, again, throughout their lives, they operate on two levels. They operate as individuals and they operate at a national level. And there's not necessarily the same rules between the individual level versus the national level. And again, that's what's interesting and that's what's important. Okay.
The point at which Abraham changed.
Yes.
From Abraham. It was changed before Ishmael was born.
No.
No?
No.
It was after.
Yeah, Abraham's name was changed when he was 99, and Ishmael was born when he was 86. 87, yeah.
So that's proof also that from that change, that this is the only son that came after.
Okay. Right. You could say correct. You could say technically Avraham had only one son. A guy named Avram had another son before. Okay, that would be a fair point. So now the greatest amount of words which are used in this section is the 67 or so verses dealing with the courtship of Rivka. So now I'll go back and I'll ask the same question, which hopefully you already know that I'm going to ask. And what question is that going to be? Is this the courtship on an individual level that we need to find a wife for Yitzchak, or is this going to be something which is of on a national level? And what, of course, is my answer going to be? Rivka. Right, but I'm asking before I get to the children. Before children, we have marriage. So is the marriage over here, hopefully, is the marriage that we have over here a marriage, is this only something on a personal level or is it on a national level? So as I said, you all know my answer already. My answer is going to be that if it was on a personal level, it would not have needed to give us all this information. If it was on a personal level, it just could have mentioned it along the way or even not mentioned it along the way. Because personal information does not need to be mentioned in Sefer Bereishit. That's really what it comes down to. Things which are on a more of a national level, even to tell you that this is the right line and that's not the right line, is information that has to be given, but other information does not necessarily have to be shared. That's the issue over here. So, I'm going to then just raise a very simple question, which we've actually have played with a little bit in the past. And that question is, we need Rivka. Why do we need Rivka? Because it's very good to have Yitzchak taking over, right, for Avraham, but if we don't have a partner for him, then this could be a very short-lived takeover. So we need there to be a Rivka as well. And my question is then very, very simple and very, very basic. Whose place does Rivka take? Right? So it would be very, very easy, and you'll back it up by pointing out a verse, it'd be very easy to say that what Rivka does is she takes the place of Sarah. And when you know that, and by the way, that's half true. When you know this, so then a verse which people initially when they read are disturbed with will make perfect sense, and that's the last verse in the whole section, the last verse. Look at source 2, the very last verse, Samech Zayin, Vayevieha Yitzchak Ahoala Sarah Imo. Yitzchak brought her to his mother's tent. V'yikach et Rivka v'tihilo li'isha. He took Rivka as a wife. V'yahaveha, and he loved her. V'yinachem Yitzchak achar imo, and he was comforted after his mother. Now, you can read that verse on a personal level. And when you read it on a personal level, you'll start bringing Freudian psychology, and you'll start telling me she's replacing his mother, and what does this mean, and this is very disturbing. And you can tell me why Jewish men are disturbed because of all this, and you can tell me all kinds of things. Except if you say all that, you're missing one really important point. And what's that? Is this verse speaking on a personal level, a national level, or is the complexity that it's actually speaking on both levels? One thing which is very interesting and very important over here, the first time the word love is mentioned in any relationship between any two people is this verse over here. Right? A lot of people lived beforehand. A lot of people may have loved one another beforehand, but this is the first time the Torah shares with us that information that a husband and wife loved one another. Yeah.
Thank you. the wife feel more comfortable, to make her feel comfortable, because it was a woman's tent. And it must have been a tradition to do that. It wasn't that his idea.
Right. So
it has nothing to do with Freud or anything like
that. Of course not. Of course. Okay, so before we get to the issue of where you go over the Chagim, and I know of a relationship, an engagement that got broken because of a fight over this point, where they were going to go to the first year for Pesach. The marriage ended up, as I said, the marriage ended up not happening because of this. Anyway, the tent of Sarah, is it a personal tent, or is it representative of a national identity? That's really the question over here. And when you realize that Sarah's tent is a national identity, so then you realize that for her to go in and to take Sarah's place is not just as a wife. Again, that's the complexity. The complexity is he loves her as his wife, but he realizes that now, you know, it's almost like it's royalty. It's almost like the new queen. She is the new queen. Which means if I instead of saying the tent here, I said Buckingham Palace, then suddenly the verse becomes completely clear. If I said that the crown prince, Yitzchak, takes his new bride and they move into Buckingham Palace, and now she becomes the queen. So you say, okay, now I understand. That's what this verse is saying. There's a love story on a personal level, but there's also a national story which is taking place because they are royalty. Avram and Sarah are royalty. Yitzchak and Rivka are royalty. That's exactly the issue going on over here. And as you very well know, various kings over the generations have had other people on the side and have had other children on the side, and it's completely irrelevant in terms of the next generation and who's taking over the issue of royalty. Is this all becoming much, much clearer? One second. Just 1 second. Yeah? Okay, good.
And only afterwards he marries her.
Takes it to
only when she shows that she can really take Sarah's place, only then she can be the wife of Israel.
Okay, good. Yes. Means that we're dealing with royalty, and that's what I keep stressing. First of all, don't bring any proofs from Henry VIII. I actually spent last week in London researching all of this, and anything doing that London has nothing to do with our topic. I can assure you, this is completely, completely different. But the issue is the national level as well. That's the issue. Is that this is royalty, and that's something that sometimes we miss, because you get so caught up in the personal story that you don't see the other level. Yeah.
It is often said, and you may or may not agree with it, that Yitzhak was a kind of retiring figure that we don't know very much about.
Don't even say it. Don't even say it.
Okay, I won't go into that. But the difference between Avram and Sarah and Yaakov and all his, that somehow Yitzhak is a shadow figure or worse. Would you subscribe to that?
I actually, there's just less information to work with. Yitzchak is very
interesting.
They don't say as much, but from what it does say, there's a great amount of information that you really can excavate, and that there really is a great deal to say about Yitzchak. I'll say a terrible thing. In my book that came out last year on Bereshit, Echoes of Eden, I have a couple of essays on Yitzchak, and there really is more information than you would normally suspect, including little things. When Yitzchak arrives over here, where does he come from? Again, someone else is finding a wife. Where does he come from? So we're told he comes from Be'er L'Chai Ro'i. That's a very interesting choice. Why does he come from there? So as I said, the little things about Yitzchak's life give us a great deal of information. There's just less narrative. Okay, just because there's less narrative doesn't mean all the various things that people have suggested over the years, which just seem to be somewhat from silly to twisted. I don't know. You can choose which one. You don't know what she's referring to. I can tell you later. But what I do want to point out is that this understanding that we have discerned from the very end of the narrative, namely that Rivka replaces Sarah, is only partially true. And a matter of fact, we only get there when we look at the last verse, instead of looking at everything which was before here in the narrative, because the narrative actually tells us a very different story. The narrative tells us something completely different, which we need to appreciate. And that is that the whole test over here, the Eved, and those of you who don't remember this, he's never called Eliezer in this chapter. There is an Eliezer Eved Avraham, and commentaries normally work with something that we can call a theory of conservation of characters. So if there's an Eved of Avraham called Eliezer in a different context, therefore the Eved of Avraham here must be Eliezer, but we'll be a little bit more careful. He's never called Eliezer in this chapter. Could be implied. It could be that the reason his name isn't mentioned is because on a previous level, he himself was a candidate to take over for Avraham. So now it's stressing that even his name is unimportant. He is not the one who'll take over Avraham. He's only an Eved, and his name isn't even mentioned. So I'm saying the absence of name may actually be very important. So that, you know, by the way, this is what I'm saying, is that you can't always draw conclusions with what things said. Sometimes even things that it doesn't say, they're important conclusions to draw from it. But he actually makes a very interesting test. Let's just start off. Avraham, and this is the beginning of source 2, makes him swear that he won't bring a wife from Ibnot HaKna'ani. Rather, he says, Pasuk Dalet ki el artzi ve el moladati teilech v'lakachta isha livni liyitzchak. You're going to go all the way back there, you're going to find a wife for my son there. When he goes, he sets up a test. The entire test revolves around one issue, which should be completely familiar to us, especially after this past week's parsha. And what is it? He's saying, will this person, when we get to this place, the woman or the girl, who will provide food, provide water, provide for the animals, take care? Now, if I had to read into that and put all of that into one word, the one word which I would use is the word chesed. What he's looking for, somebody who has the ability of performing chesed. Now, if this is a real simple point to you, you know, you say, of course, chesed. What else is needed? What else does a Jewish woman need to do? The model of chesed has actually been more so Avraham than it's been Sarah. Sarah actually strikes us as being tougher than Avraham is. Sarah is the one who says, get rid of him, you know, get rid of her. I mean, she's the one who seems to have a little bit of more, let's say, strictness to it. But it's more than that. Rivka sounds to us, coming from Avram's hometown, coming from Avram's family, to be behaving just like Avraham, which means the behavior that she's doing is Avraham behavior, which means what this Eved Avraham does, yeah, what this, that we actually don't know. That we actually don't know. What this Eved Avraham does is he listens to the words of Avraham, go to my hometown, go to my place, whatever, and then what does he look for? He looks for somebody who's just like Avraham. So that's very interesting, because again, I can ask this question. So who is Rivka replacing? Is she replacing Avraham or is she replacing Sarah? And of course, like everything else today, the answer is more complex, and the answer is both. And that's really what this whole chapter has been about. And we can try to look at a couple of sources that spell this out. It bothers you that women can have a stronger role? They told me I have to say those things in this.
Entering the presence of Shiva Kong, the abode
Give me a couple seconds. Let's take a look at some of the sources. Source 3. Beit Yitzchak v'hine zot yaduah de'avram avinu olav ha'shalom haya amud shel chesed and came bevadai beveit aviv natazeh hamidah shel chesed v'zeh ha'siman ha'igam ken inyan shel chesed mizeh ha'yachol leida ki hi mimishpachat beit adonav Avraham, which means why run the test of chesed for the obvious reasons that I stated, that this is Avram said, go to my hometown, go to my house, find some. So what do? You look for someone who's Avraham-like, which means it's not just going to be a question of genealogy, that's also important. It's not just a question of the town, that's also geography, it's also, right? But what's the real issue? The real issue will be Avraham-like. Source 4. כאשר פירשתי יפה דבר רשי זל, שכתב על פסוק אותו הוכחת לעבדך ליצחק, ראוי היא לו שתהיה גומלת חסד, וכדי להיכנס בביתו של אברהם מכאן. Which means that's what makes it worthy for her to enter into Avraham's home. Look at source number 5, which is the Chtam Sofer. The whole first part of it is a very nice read into the Eshet Chayil, which according to at least one midrash was the eulogy that Avraham gave for Sarah. I'm skipping that part. We would have done that if I would have been here on time. But let's read the last couple of lines where it starts, what's underlined, which says, Mizeh. Mizeh hivin Eliezer, im tigmul chesed lahashkoto ve'et gmalav, ota hochachta la'avdecha l'Yitzchak, va'asa chesed im adoni Avraham. It says, you would have performed, Eliezer says this, or Eved Avram says this, you would have performed chesed with Avraham. Chesed daika. It's specifically chesed we're referring to. Ki bezeh chafatz. That's what he was looking for. Avalakushta demilta. But the truth of the matter is, haytarifka memaleit makom Sarah. She actually replaced Sarah. She replaced Sarah. But this is exactly what I'm pointing out. There's a complexity. Rivka actually replaces both. Look at the Chtam Sofer now again, a couple of verses later. I think he says the same idea, but a lot sharper. V'asa chesed im Adoni Avraham, which is on the same words. Ratzalomar ki yadasha haya Yitzchak midat hadin. Eved Avraham knows that Avraham is chesed, but he knows that Yitzchak is midat hadin. I'm not sure what the Rosh Yitevot are coming about. Hitpalel lat Shem Yitbarach, he prayed to God, shetizadamen lo isha mimidat hachesed kidei sheyitzu miben shneihem Yaakov midat emet. Haklula midat racham v'rachamim. Slicha, haklula midin v'rachamim. De'ela lo yechas v'shalom kiim la'olam. V'chein haya be'emet ki Rivka ohevet et Yaakov, aval b'yitzchak tevayov yitzchak et Esav. Mishum kein, Amar v'asa chesed im Adoni Avraham, chesed daika, specifically chesed, v'asa lo nichush b'midat ha'chesed, l'ashkato v'gumalav v'amar ba'edah ki asita chesed im Adoni. He said a lot of things here. The most basic thing that he said is that the relationship of Avram and Sarah is going to be echoed by the relationship between Rivka and Yitzchak. But Avram was chesed, his kindness, and Rivka was strictness. Yitzchak is strictness, so therefore Rivka is going to need to be chesed, which means she's going to replace Sarah as the new queen, but the role of the new queen, and therefore she's going to be in Sarah's tent, but the role of the new queen is going to be a different role than the old queen because of that own personal relationship which they have. Some of the other, go ahead.
It's actually very, very important what you're saying for us today in Israel, because we learned that the two brothers, Yitzhak was,
Yitzhak loves Esav.
The woman who is the ancestor of the Arabs had more of goodness. And today, we see this, and they understand us because we are more, and they are more, I'm not saying the whole story, but this is very, very, very important because it's the proof so, okay. Abraham's son, not Sarah's, was more hesed than.
Right. So, right. So you realize that there's a lot more complexity to it. Sarah, and I want to get to one last point for today before they come in and start to yell at us. They actually, Rivka and Sarah, have something else in common, which also Rachel has. And I once heard Rabbi Soloveitchik say this. I've never seen any of the other students of him ever say this. I heard it. I'm apparently the only Ravophile who remembers this, because no one else has quoted this. But to my mind, it's extremely important. He said, and it's not the first time I'm quoting it either, he said that religion in Judaism follows the mother. And I started to say before, one second, religion in the Judaism follows the mother. Now, I stated earlier that that Yishmael, Avram's the father, but who's the mother? The mother is Hagar, the servant of Sarah. Bless you. Rav Soloveitchik said, why does religion follow the mother and not the father? Now, you can give me all kinds of reasons, and he gave a theological reason, but he gave a very interesting historical reason. He said that when it came to understanding who the Jewish people are and who they aren't, he said the Imahot had a better insight than the Avot did. Which means Avraham felt really bad about sending Yishmael away. Yitzchak has this love for Esav. Even with Rachel acquiesces for Leah to end up, and she's the one existing within the concubines and all, which means Rachel is there who has a much better idea who's going to be part of the Jewish people and who's not going to be part of the Jewish people. And Rabbi Soloveitchik said, consequently, it is just as the Imahot had a better, you can call this Bina Yiterai, you can call it insight, you can call it Ruach HaKodesh, you can call it whatever you want, because the Imahot had a better insight who the Jewish people will be, who they are in the next generation, Judaism will always follow the mother, because that's something which the mother has greater insight for. This is what he said regarding Sarah. But it's interesting, because the process of Sarah rejecting Yishmael and the process of Rivka rejecting Esav are two very, very different stories, but they have something in common. I mean, how are they different? They're different because Yishmael is essentially a son of Avraham, but not a son of Sarah. So therefore, you have this, you know, almost political, you know, advantage over here. She's the son. He's the son of her servant. So the relationship, as we saw, is stated very clearly. But as we get to next week, and we find that Rivka herself will have a child, and her child is going to be Esav, and her child will be favored, perhaps subjectively, but favored on some level by Yitzchak, it doesn't make a difference. Rivka is going to be the one that say, no, not that child. This is the child who is going to be the one who's accepted, which means that's strength and that ability of seeing this is something which actually merges all of, I mean, that's the tent of Sarah. That's the tent of Sarah. The tent ultimately is the home. What's the nature of this home? Sarah is going to determine it. Rivka is going to determine it. Rachel is going to determine it. Although it could very well be that each of them are taking different skills into it, which means, okay, so what do we draw? I mean, you can draw whatever political considerations you want. Everybody can hear anything I want politically. Everybody has the right to decide what I said. But one thing that we see is that, and it's significant, Rivka does not become a Sarah wannabe. She does not become a Sarah clone. She does not imitate Sarah. But she does take over Sarah's tent. But she brings a completely different skill base. Part of what's needed within her skill base is because she has a different husband and she has a different relationship and there's different complexity. So therefore, again, Rivka takes over for Sarah, but not in the way that we would think. Actually, in a completely opposite way that we would think. It's that Yitzchak himself, in the terms, again, the Kabbalistic terms, is Midat Hadin, so therefore it's necessary to have somebody who will not be Midat Hadin. Just let me see if there's anybody who says this much more clear. No, we can leave it at that. So therefore, ultimately, the whole parsha had one thing in common. We have all of these stories taking place, which again are three. You can subdivide them even more if you really want to. I don't think it's necessary. You have three stories: the death and burial of Sarah. You have the courtship of Rivka. You have then all the loose ends of Avram's life afterwards. On a personal level, there's far too much information. On a personal level, I could have said all this in seven psukim. I did not need all of the, I did not need this parsha. But when I remember that Avraham and Sarah are royalty, when I remember that these are the people who were beginning the Jewish people, it's not just their private lives which are a concern to us, it's their national lives as well, and their national identities as well, then the whole parsha takes a different complexity. We realize now that as far as the role of a king and the role of a queen are not meant to be carbon copies. By the way, is that meaningful to any of the young people here? You know what carbon copies are? Or they still have this? It's not you know, they do, okay, fine. It's not meant, okay, I'm just kidding. It's not meant to be carbon copies of the previous generation. There are different complexities in each relationship. Each relationship will be different. And what's really important from this is the new balance which is needed subsequently in each generation. There needs to be balance between the two. Avram and Sarah have a balance between the two, and it works well. Yitzhak and Rivka have a balance between the two, and it works well. Each one by themselves would be a completely different story, but we need the balance between the two. Yaakov, Rachel, and Leah is far more complicated. We'll leave that for another time. But what we realize now is that it's not the stories of individuals we're being told over here. It's the stories of a nation, and the story of a nation we really do necessitate a lot more information, because there's a much broader story which is being told, which could continue to be told, and continue needs to be understood. Have a good week.